Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Conservative. Constitutional. It's the Andrew Cooper Writer Show, keeping you informed on what's going on right here in Kentucky.
Today on the Andrew Cooper Writer Show, the LGBTQ mob in Kentucky is hopping mad. But not at Republicans. They're mad at one of their own for just not screeching at those in office constantly. And that shrill voice is someone who's never actually had to experience real hardship before. No, they're mad because they had the audacity to try to talk to others. The Kentucky Democrats and the Florida Democrats are teaming up together to fight back against the red waves that are being running through their states, just crushing their parties, making them irrelevant. But they're not doing that by moderating or denouncing what is driving people away. No, instead, they think pushing even more on baby murder will be their political savior in states like Florida and Kentucky. I'll go over just why they are wrong. But first, before we dig into those stories, because we're going to have all that and more today, before we dig into that, I want to turn our attention again to JCPS, Jefferson County Public Schools, public school system up in Louisville. And I know I talked about them a little bit yesterday, and by a little bit, I spent a fair amount of time covering just what complete and utter failures they are as a school district, as a school system, because they are. They're just gigantic failures. And as more evidence of just how they're failing, why they're failing, we need but turn to some data on their compensation packages, okay? So first, I want to thank Kentucky Statesman account on Twitter for compiling this data together for this segment here that I'm covering. But I want you to remember that JCPS, a school that spends $23,000, a student says, look, we need more money. We just need more money. We can't afford to bus kids to schools. Remember, they cut thousands of kids busing. They're having to change up start times and have kids come as late as nearly 10 a.m. in order to make it work. They say, we don't have the money. And when asked why they have the worst schools in the state and asked why less than half the kids in the JCPS system can read, write, do math, basic things that school's supposed to be able to teach kids to do, they say, well, it's because we don't have the money. Well, according to their own salary data that we can search through their online portal, they have 958 employees making more than $100,000 per year. Let me give you an idea of how much these people are paid, okay? You have the superintendent, Martin Polo, being paid $350,000 a year. Then you have the chief equity officer, who's the second highest paid person in the school district at $198,635 a year. Then you have the general counsel, $198,000. So the attorney, the head attorney for the school system, is paid the same as their chief diversity and equity officer. The chief of staff paid $198,635. The chief of accounts receivable and systems improvement receives $198,635. Chief of human resources, $198,635. Now, this is what's kind of funny. You have the chief child education officer, chief of schools, chief of operations, all making $195,000. They make $3,000 a year less. So what's funny is when I was going through that list, and I know it's just $3,000, but it tells you what they focus on. The diversity officer, the lawyers, the chief of staff, they're getting paid more than the people who actually deal with teaching kids. It's only $3,000 on a giant salary, but it just tells you what they value the most, okay? So they have 958 employees making over 100K a year. So 958 admins. They have 6,600 teachers, ish, at the Jefferson County Public Schools. That is one admin making over 100K a year for every 6.8 teachers. But remember, that's not all the admins. That's just the admins making more than $100,000 a year. There's another several hundred admins making less than $100,000 a year at Jefferson County Public Schools. And so our actual teacher to admin ratio at Jefferson County Public Schools is something like 1 to 5. So we hear them complain all the time about, we don't have enough money to pay the teachers. We need more raises for the teachers. You have the teachers unions coming out and getting involved in state legislator races in order so we can have more pay for the teachers, supposedly. But it's not about the teachers. It's about the admins. Why? Because let's take this for an example. Let's say we cut half of the 958 admins at Jefferson County Public Schools making over 100K a year. So let's not cut half. We're cutting just half that make over 100K a year. And I mean, you know, look at those titles. Chief Diversity Officer. Come on. We can do without that. So if you cut half the admins making over 100K a year, they have the average salary of about 125K plus benefits and everything else, we'd see a savings of about $71.8 million. Divide that by 6,600 teachers, and that's another $10,886 a teacher and more pay that could be going out there. You know, these educators and teachers getting all upset at the state legislator, the state taxpayer, that they're not getting enough funding, getting mad that they can't get their property tax raises and get more money from the rock that is you, get more blood from a rock. Water, but I'm going to call it blood. More blood money. You know, money taken by force. They can't get more of those sweet, sweet tax dollars from you. You won't give it to them. And they want to yell at you about that. Don't you hate the teachers? Instead of turning to the people who have the money right now, the administrative officers, and saying, hey, why do we have so many of you? Why do we have so many of you getting so much? We could all be making another 10 grand a year if just half of you went away. And then our ratio, instead of being 1 to 5, might be 1 to 10. Oh, no. Is that enough admins? Because remember, we're not cutting half. I mean, JCPS alone spends over $3.5 million a year just on the salaries on the people in the Central Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Office. Just their salaries. Not to mention all the others throughout the districts that are within the actual schools themselves. I mean, if you ask the average parent, you ask the average teacher, which would you rather have? Would you rather have a DEI office that costs millions of dollars a year or teachers to get a raise? What do you think they're going to pick? We know what they're going to pick. That's why they don't want to give you the choice. That's why they don't want to give them the option. They instead want to demagogue issues about how you hate education if you dare say one thing negative about, hey, maybe the school's just, it's not a money issue. Maybe it's a leadership problem. They want to yell at you for saying that while not being able to look internally and say, what are we doing? We have almost 1,000 people making over 100K a year in a school district with only 6,600 teachers. You know what we should do? We should send our HR department to Puerto Rico. That's what we should do. We just need to recruit more teachers from Puerto Rico and spend money on that. That seems like a really good idea. Well, coming up after this, we're going to be digging into this story regarding the left is hopping mad at one of their own, the first ever elected transgender person in Kentucky. They're mad at them. We'll go over what this dude who thinks he's a woman did to upset them after this short break. You're listening to the Andrew Cooper Raider Show, your source for Kentucky politics. As always, if you want to reach out to the show, feel free to email info@theandrewshow.com. Once again, that's info@theandrewshow.com. You can also head on over to theandrewshow.com, click that contact tab, and leave a contact form. You can fill that out there over at theandrewshow.com. You can also see places to see past and listen to past episodes. You can get the live feed for the WZXI radio show if you're trying to listen to it at that 9 a.m. or 9 p.m. time on WZXI. So you can catch all that there at theandrewshow.com. But we'll be back in a few short minutes. And you're back with the Andrew Cooperwriter Show. So Rebecca Blankenship is a guy, born a guy, is a guy, who thinks he's a woman, but he's also an elected member of the Berea Independent School District, which I'm going to think veer off the track a few times throughout the story, but I kind of want to pause here and just have like a frank discussion with anybody who votes in school district races, which should be everybody. All of you listening to this should be voting in your school district races, but can we adopt like some sort of unspoken rule here that first, we're not going to vote for someone who doesn't have children to sit on our school board, like, ever? Like, we should, I just think we should never elect somebody who doesn't have children. They don't even necessarily have to have kids in the district, but just, like, having children to where you have some sort of intrinsic value here. Like, I understand, it's everybody's money. People without kids help fund the schools, and they should get their voices heard, and so on and so forth, and yada, 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 yada. But at the same time, let's just think about this logically, okay? When you have somebody on the board who either has kids in the district, kids that graduated from the district, or at least has had kids that are going to school or have went to school, there is a little bit of an intrinsic motivation there, right? There's a natural buy-in to this idea that it's about building for the next generation. It's about building our future. Because if you're somebody who doesn't have kids, the idea of like, hey, I'm not saying you can't care about what's coming down the pipe for future generations. It's just, there's not as much of an intrinsic motivation to do so because you don't have any of your own people that you've taken responsibility of, like children coming up in that future generation. And so when it comes to decision-making on a school board, like, if we just think logically, who do we think would make a better decision here, okay? A young guy that thinks he's a woman that doesn't have kids, because I believe Blankenship is like, he's like 30 on the high side, who doesn't have kids, or like a 40-year-old woman with a couple of kids in the school system, or even that have graduated from the school system, who do you think would be more likely to make a bad decision with the tax dollars? Who do you think is more likely to not care about as many dollars as possible going towards educating the kids? I mean, I know either could, granted, but if we're just playing like a likelihood game, a motivation game, talking about what pushes people to make decisions, I think we should have a frank conversation about not electing people who don't have kids to our school boards. But anyways, I digress. So Blankenship is the first elected transgender person in Kentucky, but his own LGBTQ mob is on the prowl, they're on the attack, and he's their next victim on the menu. They want a little bit of Blankenship stew. So what did the transgender school board member say? Well, he had the audacity to say that talking with Republican lawmakers is a good thing versus like just screeching at them and having out-of-state child molesters come in, dress, you know, cross-dressing as nuns, which really happened a few years ago. No, Blankenship feels he might have gained a little more ground by trying to give establishment and Republicans what we all know they want most of all from the left, and that is for them to not be called a bigot, which, like I said, I'm going to digress a few times. I think I'm going to go off the beaten path here a few times just because I think it's worth talking about, but this is a real Achilles heel of the establishment Republicans. They like actually care what people who would never in a million years ever vote for them or any other Republican actually thinks of them. They care more about not being called a racist and bigot by people who most likely don't even live in their district, let alone would ever vote for anybody that should be or claims to serve the conservative principles that the Republican says they believe in. So they care more about not being called a bigot by them than they care about the people's opinions who like actually vote for them, that are actually in their district. It's crazy. And it's obvious too, because when you look at like some of the decision making going on around building up, I don't know, the statutory commission on race and access to equal opportunity that came in the BLM backlash in 2021. They voted to create that. Republicans joining in on the statue being torn down in the Capitol Rotunda of Robert E. Lee because they just, you know, don't like him. And so, or they think he's racist. And so you see that kind of behavior from them, you know, or they acknowledged early on DEI, they liked it. They actually pushed it, a lot of members, because they thought this was my ticket to not being called racist. Because they think, like, there's a world where they wouldn't be called racist. But anyways, once again, Blankenship, first elected transgender person in Kentucky, own LGBTQ mobs on the prowl, attacking them. So what'd he say? What'd he do? So we have this social media account from a Patty Piot, who is a leftist activist on the here in Kentucky, pushing leftism, as they typically do. And Patty Piot tweeted out a screenshot from a LEX18 article where Blankenship was quoted in. And the caption on this screenshot is, "Are you," she didn't say effing, but "effing kidding me?" question mark. Okay. And this was the quote. This is what she was disgusted with, the LX18 article. So I'm reading from what Patty shared out from the article. "The Fairness Campaign says the 2024 legislative session stands in stark contrast to the last two Kentucky General Assemblies, which saw increasing attacks on LGBTQ Kentuckians, especially transgender kids. Advocates like Rebecca Blankenship, who became the first openly trans elected official in Kentucky when," this is, I'm quoting from the Herald Leader here, "she became a school board member for the Berea Independent School District, believes better relationships with lawmakers have helped their success this year. This year, I think we can say we are deeply grateful to people like Representative Decker and Senator Tishner, Representative Tate, and others who listen to us with respect and belief in our dignity. LGBT Kentuckians needed a break. I'm glad we got one," she said. "And I hope that legislators continue to engage with us in a manner that they can see we're coming from, they can see where we're coming from, and that we're just don't want to be discriminated against." Okay, so another sidetrack here, real quick. You know, when people ask, can we get evidence of media bias? Can we see just how far left the media is? Just go through just that article there, where LAX18, which is supposed to be just a normal local, middle-of-the-road kind of news source, local news, right? Shouldn't be as touched by national media things. Well, you can tell that they're left-wing versus right-wing based upon if they honor the person's pronouns. I guess if you wanted to say centrist on the issues to just be able to report stories dealing with transgender people, you could just use the person's name and stay out of the whole pronoun fray. But all these media outlets honoring this pronoun BS is taking sides. That is taking a side, and it's siding with the leftist side. And honestly, I'm impressed. I'm a little impressed here because the left is really good. They've got this really unique ability to just completely gaslight an entire nation by sitting there and pretending things that are clearly political are not clearly political. Like the other day, my wife was wearing a sweater she has. She's got a little subdued up in the corner Republican elephant logo with FCRP under it, which she actually got from the Floyd County Republican Party, but, you know, works for us. Obviously, we live in Lexington, so Fayette County Republican Party has the same initials. But anyways, a person complained about the sweater being political and ridiculous at the same time that they're wearing a giant Pride Progress flag on their shirt. I mean, the gaslighting on the left is, it's like a superpower. And it disgusts me, but at the same time, the commitment to it, the intellectual dishonesty it takes. I mean, you know, those of you who read 1984 know there's this whole motif about 2 + 2 = 5. Like, you need to convince yourself that even something that you know isn't true is true in your heart of hearts in order to be fully dedicated to the party. So the ability to believe 2 + 2 = 5, the dishonesty here, it's mind-blowing to me, and it's kind of impressive. So anyways, you'd hear that what they tweeted out and from that article, and you probably heard that and thought, what's the issue here? What could the left be possibly upset about? I mean, are they talking about maybe the claim of targeting LGBTQ people? They say, no, we were targeted this year. Is that what they're upset about? Nope. That isn't it at all. They're mad at Rebecca Blankenship for having the audacity to say thank you to the legislators that he says listened to him, quote unquote, listened to him, and took into account his opinion. And the fact that he would ever say thank you, that he would bother trying to build bridges instead of just screeching at them like a banshee, is what has the left so incredibly upset. So we'll be going over the comments on that, what the left is saying about that, as well as I do think it's worthwhile to actually dig into what the claim is about targeting LGBTQ people, the claim by Blankenship there, that they have been targeted, that we hear the left talking about that all the time. I think that's worthwhile too as well. So we'll be digging into all that and more here after this short break. You listen to the Andrew Kubrater Show, your source for Kentucky politics. And you're back with the Andrew Kubrater Show. Before the break, we've been digging into a tweet by a Patty Piot, I think is how you say this person's name, Patty Piot, where they're attacking the first openly transgender elected person in Kentucky. I read the quote for saying thank you to the Republican legislators for sitting down and talking with Rebecca Blankenship, who's a dude that thinks he's a woman, and listened to them and took into account what they had to say and would be willing to adjust their bills or ended up not passing things at all. And in this claim, of course, in the article and what Rebecca had to say, he says that the LGBTQ people, especially the youth, have been constantly under attack in the last several sessions. They say that increasing attacks on LGBTQ, the Fairness Campaign said this, increasing attacks on the LGBTQ Kentuckians, especially transgender kids. Now, I'm going to be honest with you, okay? This whole attacks on transgender kids and we're under this constant attack, this is the extremism that is causing them to lose states all over the South. This is just absolutely, completely extreme. I mean, you hear the article quote, and from the right, the only thing that we see that's a problem is that nobody's targeting LGBTQ people. It's such a mouthful. Man, alphabet soup. Anyways, like, no one is throwing gay people in jail. We're just saying, like, hey, you can't chop a child's genitalia off and call that mental health care. And, like, you know, stop showing children pornography. It's weird and it's abusive. That seems reasonable. And, you know, I don't particularly care if that's being done in the name of the LGBTQ mob or any other crowd, a straight crowd. I don't care. I'd say the same thing. Just as I think it's wrong to take your child to a drag show, I also think it's wrong to take your child to a strip club or a cabaret show. In the same way that I think it's wrong to show children the gay porn that is genderqueer and all these other books that we have in our public and school libraries in the kids section, I also think it's wrong to show kids straight porn as well. I'm remarkably consistent in that. So I'm pretty consistent, and it's got nothing to do with the LGBTQ mob. We've just seen that this, right now, mainly, the LGBTQ alphabet mafia is the one actively trying to do these things at the moment. But let's just put what Blankenship, the Fairness Campaign, actually said to the side for a moment here and look at the crazed reaction. So Patty shares this, and it has the caption that I read out. And the comments on this are just absolutely hilarious. Okay, so here's one here. Says, Kentucky's got its own Caitlyn Jenner. Time to unfollow and stop supporting the Fairness Campaign. The about face that Rebecca Blankenship has made has been something all right. I smell a hoodwink. Oh, please, Rebecca. What a miserable human. We as Democrats should apologize to the LGBT youth in Kentucky for this kind of piss poor advocacy. So, other than the false claims, as discussed, all Blankenship said was that talking with Republican reps did more to stop bad laws from being passed. That's his assertion. That is the part they shared. That's what it said. So I have absolutely no clue what they're upset about from their side. What they call bad bills, like the bill, drag show bill, the bill that came up in order to stop children from attending sexually explicit performances, like these drag shows where they're simulating sexual acts and kids are shoving dollar bills into their clothes and all kinds of other crazy, ridiculous, gross, disgusting things. The bad bills, quote unquote, like there's a bill to protect religious liberty, which the Fairness campaign took issue with because they were saying that, well, it would allow people to discriminate against, quote unquote, LGBTQ people in the name of religious liberty, which, I mean, let's be honest here. You have a First Amendment right to association. I mean, I know we don't like to talk about it, but we can be honest here that you don't have a right to somebody else's stuff, services, company. You don't individually actually have a right to it. They actually, according to our Constitution, have a right of association. They have a right to deny anybody from associating with them that they want to. Basically, is another way to say that. And so if we're going to go into rights, yes, religious liberties, because it's clearly and plainly spelled out in the Constitution, has more rights than your desire to not be discriminated against. Because that is not clearly spelled out in the Constitution, actually, quite the opposite. But anyways, they stopped those bills. And what Blankenship is saying is it didn't pass because he, like, bothered to talk to the Republican representatives and senators. And these far leftist Democrats here are mad at what something they didn't want to happen didn't happen. And they're just upset that people bothered to, I don't know, talk about it instead of the normal thing, which is let's go sit up in the gallery when a bill's in the middle of being passed and screech about it and get arrested. That's better advocacy, they say, than actually stopping bills from passing that should pass. And it's this kind of extremism that is causing them to lose states all over the South. I mean, social side of issues here. Things like, you know, their extremism on Gaza, LGBTQ issues, climate change, everything. They're so incredibly extreme on literally everything. The most extreme view they could take, they take it. And honestly, their extremism is hurting my party because they're opening up such a large gap between conservatism and whatever the actual H it is that they're doing here. And there's so much space in between me and them that people who have no business calling themselves conservatives or Republicans when they're running for office are ending up in my party running for office because they know they certainly aren't that, whatever that is. And so, you know, Republicans just seem like the reasonable ones in the room, quote unquote. And so they join in and they seek to find some kind of middle ground between the issues, but they call themselves Republicans because trying to find a middle ground as a Democrat's a non-starter. You can't do that anymore in this country. But you do that as a Republican and you can call yourself the real Republican and you can attract in institutional donors and attracting the money from the donor class that way too, because a lot of the Republicans just want to return to like the early 2000s where, you know, can we just sit in our smoke-filled rooms in the back and kind of, you know, chit-chat about the bigger issues that actually matter and then out front, you know, look like we're real nice and maybe do a little bit of a show for them about how we hate each other in order to just, you know, us first them to stay in office. They want that. And so they find more success in our party. I'm not saying they find a lot of success as we're seeing here in Kentucky, but they'll find more. So that's hurting my party. Because they just know that if they're a Democrat, they're going to be screeched at by purple-haired sexual deviants like all the time. So that's why Kentucky's gone so far red. And that's why Florida, which used to be a purple state, has gone red. In an attempt to stop this tide coming in, the Kentucky Democrat Party and the Florida Democrat Party are coming together to build a coalition on something that they think will be the real strong issue here for them, abortion. We'll be covering that and just how wrong they are after this short break. As always, if you want to reach out to the show, feel free to email info@theandrewshow.com. Once again, that's info@theandrewshow.com. Or head on over to theandrewshow.com, hit the contact tab, and feel free to reach out to the show, not just with your questions, comments, ideas, story information. Those of you who listen to the show on a regular basis know that if you send over something good worth talking about, I will mention it on the show and I will dig into your questions. So I do want to be responsive to you, the listener. But we'll be back to discuss what KDP, Kentucky Democrat Party, and the Florida Democrat Party are coming together on after this short break. We'll see you in a few short minutes. And you're back in this final segment of the Andrew Cooperwriter Show, your source for Kentucky politics. The Kentucky Democrat Party and the Florida Democrat Party are teaming up on an issue that they think will be their saving grace, and that is the murder of unborn children. That is abortion, of course. And so, first, why are both these states teaming up together? Well, they're finding themselves becoming less and less of a force to be reckoned with in their states. They're finding that their states are becoming more and more red. Of course, Kentucky before Florida. But the shift in our state house really didn't come to fruition until 2017, and Florida's starting to realize the same problem in the South. And so they're saying, well, what can we do to fight it? And so the Kentucky Democrat Party thinks that by teaming up with Florida on abortion, that'll be their saving grace. And they think this because of the Beshear winning his election. And of course, Beshear brought up abortion and quote unquote, Cameron did too. And I'm putting that in quotations. We'll dig into that here in a bit. But I think this comes from a misguidance about why Beshear, quote unquote, won. And the reason why he won has nothing to do with abortion. It has a lot to do with, one, the incumbent effect. The devil you know is better than the devil you don't know. So when you're running for office and re-election, people have lived under Beshear. Beshear, fortunately for him and his ability to get reelected, has had a Republican legislature that has been largely a cap on what be some of his more leftist attitudes. If Beshear was able to legislate the way he wanted to, if he was able to pass the laws he wanted to and put in place all the policies he wanted to without the legislature getting in the way, I think he would have lost because his extremism on things like the transgender issues or his extremism on abortion or his extremism on spending policies would just have shown through a lot better. His desire for control also would have shown through better, but instead, you know, the legislature that was largely kind of tapping that down, really doing him a favor when it came to re-election time. The other reason why is the name Beshear. Remember, many of these people voted for his dad, Steve Beshear, when they are either A, registered Democrats, and now they're registered Republicans, but where Kentucky too, remember, was majority registered Democrat, and now has become majority registered Republican within the past few years. That means a lot of the voters, especially older voters, were Democrats at one point, and they voted for Democrats at one point. Specifically, a lot of Republican voters had voted for a Beshear at one point. And so voting for Beshear again, voting for a Democrat again, is not as unthinkable as it is to people who've been lifelong conservatives, lifelong Republicans, or at least people who've never voted for a Democrat before, couldn't imagine doing so. It's a lot easier to swallow that if you have done it before. And a lot of them had, and they'd done it for Beshear. But also, there's a lot of even current Republicans that didn't just vote for Steve Beshear, but they gave money to Steve Beshear. You have former Republican Party chairs at the county and state level. You have a lot of legislators with R after their names that gave money to Steve Beshear. So the idea that there would be large amounts of Republicans that are comfortable voting for Beshear is just false. And then also, Cameron was uniquely just, he was just a kind of their candidate. Famously, Cameron just wouldn't say anything on a lot of issues. For an example, I remember school choice. For some reason, he wouldn't come out and say he was for school choice, even though it polls well. The entire thing polls well. Polls well with Republicans, polls well with, honestly, Democrats and in these cities and everything else. It polls well, but he wouldn't just come out and say it. Even though all the people that cared about that issue on the other side already weren't going to vote for him, so he could only pick up people by coming out and saying that, he just wouldn't do it. And also, when you're running against an incumbent, especially one who's popular, you have got to cast a vision for how your governancy would be different than the current person's. What specifically will you do differently than him? And coming out with things like, we will not waste money on XYZ. We're spending millions of dollars on these things, and when I get into office, that will stop immediately. Those types of issues would have been galvanizing to the people, but instead, you had somebody who really didn't say much. And you know this because if I asked you, please tell me one thing. Tell me one thing that Cameron would have done differently in his governorship. Tell me what a few of his policies would have looked like. Most of you can't answer. Some of you may be able to. I could answer a few things, but that's only because I pay a lot of attention. And I listened to what he said in a lot of places. But for the average voter, they had no idea what the difference was. So I don't think abortion had much to do with the electoral success. And I think as evidence of that, too, we can look at 2022. If we look at in 2022, abortion was literally on the ballot. We had an abortion amendment to our Constitution to say that nobody has a right to an abortion in our Constitution to head off a whole lot of these court challenges that we're seeing of people trying to claim that state constitutions have some intrinsic right to an abortion, something that, of course, they use in Roe v. Wade to claim that our federal constitution has some sort of right to an abortion. And so we're trying to deal with that case ahead of time with that constitutional amendment. So that was literally on the ballot and fails. But meanwhile, what happened at the state level and the federal level? Did a single Republican incumbent lose? Did a congressman lose? Did a senator lose? Did Senator Rand Paul lose? No, he didn't. Did Republican House members lose seats? No, they picked up seats. Did the Senate lose seats? No, they didn't. So while people voted on the abortion amendment, they did not vote in the way you would expect them to when it came to the actual politicians if they cared so much about abortion. And that tells you, for the vast majority of voters, they either A, don't care about abortion, or if they do, in Kentucky, generally speaking, they're against it. And we also know this to be intrinsically true because for a long time, the Democrats in Kentucky, what'd they know? They knew that, hey, look, you don't go after guns and babies. Guns and babies, guns and babies. Even Matt Jones, for those of you who listen to KSR, he wrote a book called Mitch Please, where he was looking at running in 2020 in the primary in order to run up against Mitch McConnell for that Senate seat. And so he traveled the state and he wrote a book while he was traveling the state, and in it called Mitch Please. And he talked about in the book how for a long time, even on the Democrat side of things, the going words were, you run on guns and babies. You're always pro 2A and you're against abortion. That's what you should be when you're running in Kentucky, even as a Democrat. And so what, you think over the last 4, 5, 6 years, the voters have just suddenly massively changed? No, it's actually your extremism on things like abortion, on things like guns, that is causing these states to be so red. So the Kentucky Democrat Party and the Florida Democrat Party teaming up on abortion makes like no sense. But these are typical politicals. This is why I said, you know, you got to be careful about the establishment learning their lesson. You know, somebody wrote in and said, I don't know if I want to vote for Democrat or vote for Republicans anymore. And what's crazy is that if a Republican loses to a Democrat, they don't turn around and say, oh, is that because we were too liberal and we didn't provide enough of a dichotomy? We didn't provide enough excitement to the base. We didn't turn out enough voters. We didn't sell our message well enough on conservative principles and draw an actual difference between us. No, they'll sit there and say it's because we weren't enough like that guy who won. They look at the guy who won and says, we need to be more like him. And I understand that logic and thought process. Instead of looking around and saying, why is it that literally the person who's painted as the most extreme person in all of our history, Donald Trump, painted the most extreme by our media, is not only wins Kentucky by massive percentages, but also was the one who delivered us the Republican majority in the state house. When he ran is when we finally jumped by a large amount, enough seats to take control of the state house. Instead of looking at that and saying, that guy is saying and doing things, and the media does not say he's moderate at all. Many people say he's the most extreme MAGA Republican there is on the left. But despite that, he wins. Maybe because your idea, media's idea of extremism, isn't what people care about. They care about their principles being delivered on. And they care about seeing change. And if you can deliver that and show them how you can do that, they'll turn out and vote for you too. Well, y'all, that's what we have time for today on the Andrew Cooper Show. We'll see you back here tomorrow. I hope you have a great rest of your day.